Yes, it's that time of the week where we talk all things pets, and I'm joined by Dr. Kimberly Earl. Hello.
Hello.
Well, you might have to do more of the talking because clearly I can't talk very well.
between your tongue and my rough throat, yeah. It's going to be a fun show.
It will be. So we'll need lots of callers to give us a call.
Please.
And talk about cats, dogs, birds, whatever today. Now, also, you want to talk about, I guess, illnesses that pets have and the signs.
Early signs that there could be something wrong that as a pet owner you might miss. So,
okay. Yeah.
Early signs of illness that, you know, that you might not miss. In my line of work, we are really used to looking for subtle signs, but in your day-to-day life with your pets at home, you may not be aware, you know, and it's one of those things, because you're seeing them every single day, sometimes if the changes are happening gradually, it's hard to actually identify them, you know? Mm. And so we were talking about this the other day that there was some discussion about, you know, how can people let it get that far? And we sort of say, well, they don't know. Like, you just don't know what you don't know sometimes, right? So we thought, let's try to bring this out in the open and see what kind of things can we help people to sort of recognize as a sign of illness in their pet. The big one that I like to think about is, you know, just general slowing down of an older pet. We think that slowing down is a normal, you know, sort of thing as you get older, because we like to slow down as we're getting older. But it's not always just as simple as the pet is more mature, they have lower exercise levels. Sometimes they're slowing down because everything's hurting a little bit more, or they're not feeling very good. They don't really want to engage in the world as much because they've got other things sort of going on. And, you know, one of the most common comments I hear people say to me is that, well, he's not in pain because he's not crying or he's not whinging or he's not, you know, he doesn't make a noise when I touch him. And unfortunately, our pets are really stoic. And a lot of times they have to be, because if they show that there's something wrong, you know, they're going to be right away on the outs with their community groups or their herds or flocks or whatever kind of animal they are. And so they don't usually, you know, give us a large of noise and obvious signs. A lot of times they'll just become more quiet. They'll sleep more. They are less engaged with their families. You know, it's a real big red flag for me when I see a dog. You know, somebody comes and says, well, I came home from work for the last couple of days and he just hasn't gotten up to the door to greet me. That might be that he can't get up. Maybe he's weak or he's painful. But maybe just he's just feeling really lethargic, like I'm tired, or I'm nauseous, or, you know, I'm just worried about getting up. You know, getting up it's all too much effort. That's a real concern. We really need to have that in our head as like, oh, something's going on here, particularly with dogs, because dogs always want to interact with their, you know, their environment.
They love everybody.
So slowing down might not just be normal aging. Arthritis, chronic pain, heart disease is a really big one. If your dog stops having normal energy levels when they're on their walks, we could be dealing with heart disease here. Reluctance to jump, sleeping a lot more. You know, cats are a classic sign of this. You know, older cats, people say, oh, they just sleep all the time. Sometimes when we start addressing their pain and arthritis, cats get a lot of spinal pain and arthritis as they get older. We will sometimes see a return of cats. You know, people will come back in and say, oh my goodness, the cat started jumping back up on the top of the fridge again. You know, they go up onto the kitchen bench and then up onto the fridge. I haven't done that in years. So a lot of times, you know, just the sort of lack of energy, you know, is not just old age. It could be clinical signs. How about bad breath? You know, everybody sort of goes, oh, it's just doggy breath, right? Dogs and cats can get really bad breath, and they can have really severe dental disease. So they can have disease of the teeth and the gums, but they can also get things like tumors, masses in the mouth. And a lot of times those, because the mouth is such a moist, humid environment, we get a lot of secondary bacterial overgrowth. Bacteria is often stinky. And so, you know, it might be that people sort of go, oh, the dog's breath has gotten really stinky recently. We really should, you know, check that out. And cats as well. Cats are a little bit funny in their mouths. They actually have very sensitive mouths in terms of they develop a lot of inflammatory conditions. And so we will get cats that will come into us because they're a little bit more standoffish as pets. You know, they're not like a dog. It's necessarily going to get right up in your face. But we will get cats that will come into us with horribly, horribly inflamed gums. Mm. And they're really, really painful. And the quality of life difference that we can make in those cats by taking those painful teeth out is just amazing. You see these cats that start running around the house again. They've got more energy. They're, you know, they want to wanting to play with toys again. So that's really important. So don't just think about doggy breath or bad breath in your pets as being a normal thing. It's usually not. There'll be some underlying problem going on there. How about water intake? So I often ask people, what's Fluffy's water intake like? Oh, really good. Yeah, he's a really, really good drinker. Excellent. Except that increasing water intake is often a sign of clinical disease. Kidney disease, diabetes, they're all, you know, those sorts of things will cause an increase in water intake. Sometimes urinary tract infections even, you know, the animal is urinating more frequently, which means that they've actually got an increased requirement for drinking water. Cushing's disease is the same. They tend to pee a lot more, which means that they're thirsty, and so they drink a lot more water. So if you've had a change, if you're noticing you're having to fill the bowl a lot more frequently on a regular basis, right? It's absolutely normal for a dog to go out for a big walk or run and then come back and have a great big drink of water. But, you know, if Fido's sitting around the house and not really doing very much and still emptying the water dishes, that's a real problem. Cats will do the same. Cats with hyperthyroid disease will drink lots and lots of water. And they're a little bit sneaky because sometimes they get restless and more active for a little while. And people sort of go, oh, he's acting like a bit like a kitten again. And they're yowling and wanting to interact and constantly hungry. But that can be for a cat, that can be a sign of thyroid disease. Right. Weight changes. So in particular, weight loss. I think if you are looking at your dog and thinking, he's losing a bit of weight and I haven't really done anything with his diet that's different. That could be a sign. We might be losing protein through our kidneys if we've got kidney disease. We might be, again, diabetes. Oftentimes, our diabetic animals start out overweight, but then as the disease progresses, they start to rapidly lose weight. So that would be a big clinical sign. And cancer as well is something that will cause a lot of weight loss. And so, you know, sometimes you look at a patient, they've walked through the door and you look at the record and it says this is a 14-year-old dog and they come through the door and they're kind of skeletal. And in my heart, I sort of go, oh, gosh, this is a cancer patient. I've just got to find it. You know, you can sometimes see that. So if we can identify that early, that's a really good thing. Now, a significant proportion of our pet population is actually overweight. So this makes it more complicated because a lot of times, you know, when Fluffy's come in and he's 6 years, 7 years, 8 years of age, I'm saying to Mrs. Smith, I know you love Fluffy an awful lot, but Fluffy's getting too fat. You really have to stop giving him all those treats. We have to slim back on his food. We have to give him a little bit more exercise. And then, you know, Fluffy comes in as a 10-year-old dog and I go, oh my goodness, Fluffy has lost 2 kilos. Mrs. Smith says, oh, I've been doing such a good job of not giving him so many treats. But, you know, if Fluffy was an 8-kilo dog and now he's down to, you know, 6 kilos, that's probably too much weight loss. And I'm going to start to be a little bit, you know, concerned about that, particularly if it persists. So weight loss is a big one, but also weight gain where we really don't feel like we're overfeeding or we're making a really, really solid effort to get the weight off of this cat or get the weight off of this dog and it's just not budging. We need to do some testing for some endocrine diseases, thyroid disease and things like that. Cats tend to get an overactive thyroid, dogs get an underactive thyroid, and it does make them very challenged in terms of weight loss. So that would be something to speak to your vet about.
I've got a question, Kimberly.
Sure.
You were talking about pets drinking too much. Mm-hmm. How much water should dogs and cats be drinking?
Right. So the minimum sort of requirement for maintenance, I guess, for maintaining a well-hydrated pet is they talk about 3 mils per kilo per hour. So if you look at a 10-kilo dog, that's about 720 mils per day that they need to have. And that's assuming that it's not a particularly hot day or they're not doing a lot of exercise. So they can easily triple that if they're doing exercise, right? But if you've got a 10-kilo dog who's, you know, drinking like a liter and a half or 2 liters of water in a day, we're going to start to get, you know, pretty suspicious that there could be something going on. Cats get a lot of water from their food. So we don't see cats drinking as much. And that's actually a bit of a clue. Like some people sort of go, oh, yeah, I see the cat drinking all the time. Or the cat has started to jump up and want to drink out of the sink. Where they didn't used to see it. So cats will take a lot of water from their food. And we used to think that if we fed cats a dry diet, that they would just drink more water to keep themselves hydrated. But we've actually shown, or they've shown, that that's not true. It doesn't happen that way. So cats who are eating predominantly dry food will actually be in a state of sort of subclinical dehydration, even if they're a normal, healthy cat. They're not ever quite as well hydrated as if they're eating some wet food. So it is one of the reasons that we do recommend feeding a combination of dry and wet food for your cat. And if your cat has ever had an issue with their kidneys or their urinary tract, you know, if your vet has sort of said, oh, this cat has bladder issues, then we want to actually really increase the amount of wet food so that they're staying better hydrated, producing more urine, which is going to flush out the bladders more often and keep them, you know, hydrated. So, yeah. Okay. Cats are a bit different to dogs that way.
Oh, okay. Mm. Well, I didn't realize that. My last cat, she used to drink a lot and she did have a thyroid issue.
Yes, yeah. So, thyroid cats will drink a lot as well. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, if you've got any other illnesses that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I was just going to say in terms of behavior change. So I went to a talk recently about behavior in cats and dogs and things. And we were talking about the statistic is that up to 75% of animals with behavioral problems, particularly if they haven't always had them, that there can be a pain, an underlying pain response or pain cause of pain that's causing the behavior. So, you know, it might be a dog who's showing anxiety in the house. They hear a loud noise and they start to shake or tremble. And people go, oh, he must have had a terrible experience at some point. But really what's actually happening is something, you know, that dog is feeling a little bit uncertain because maybe they've got a sore back and now they're worried about, am I going to be able to get up and jump if I need to run away, you know, that sort of thing. So we can start to see some issues with underlying pain. And I think it's probably something that as a profession we haven't paid enough attention to, but there's a lot push to really make sure that we're addressing pain as an underlying cause for behavioral disorders, aggression in particular, grumpiness, you know, animals who are showing signs of increasing anxiety. Can you imagine if every time a door slams and it makes you, it just startles you, right? You know what, your body has that response of jumping up. If you've got back pain, every time you get startled, it hurts. And it doesn't take very long for you to start associating the sound of a loud door slamming or maybe a car backfiring for you to sort of go, oh my God, loud noises make my back hurt. You know, and so we start to get dogs who are starting to become more and more anxious because you never know who's going to slam the door or when a car is going to backfire. And that startle response is actually causing you a physical pain response in your back, in your body. So, yeah, I think as a vet, we're really starting to look really, really closely at is there anything that could be causing pain in this dog or this cat as a sign? You know, they're showing anxiety or they're showing aggression, but there could be an underlying pain problem that's unrelated, you know, to that. So, yeah, it's an interesting thing. It was a great seminar I went to recently, actually. So, yeah.
Well, it's hard to know because, I mean, obviously they can't really talk. So to us to sort of pay attention and go, okay, what sort of signs are they displaying?
Absolutely, yeah.
To NURFM 103.7. This is Pet Chat on 2NURFM. Now, we've got quite a few callers. I just said don't be shy and everyone's and ringing, everyone's so coming. Good on you. We've got Fiona from Maitland on the line. Hi, Fiona. You've got a problem with your cat.
Yes, I do. My cat seems to want to spray urine around the house on a regular basis. And I'm just wondering if there's something I can get him to stop doing that.
Listen, it's a pretty complex problem. Presumably it's a male cat and he's spraying against vertical surfaces?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. He's desexed already?
Yes.
Great. Okay. So that's the first thing. The next thing to do is to have a look at the environment and make sure that if there's any other cats around, either inside the house or in your neighborhood, that can be causing a bit of stress for these cats. They can be quite territorial, but they can also be quite, cats I've often said are quite passive aggressive. And so can be hard to identify whether or not cats in a multi-cat household are getting on with each other. Making sure we've got lots and lots of resources and lots of territory for him to explore and have of his own. And so remembering that cats live in a three-dimensional world, not just, you know, the floor plan of your house is only just a small part of it for cats. We really want them to be able to get up high and to be able to, you know, move in a vertical direction, because that can actually be really helpful, calming for a cat. If they can get up high and look down on the world, everybody says that they are much happier creatures. So making sure that they've got places to go, lots of litter boxes around in the house. You may need to use some of the, pheromone therapies, the Feliways, things like that. If it's not happened previously and it's something that is new, we would always check them out medically and make sure we haven't gotten anything like a urinary tract infection or, something else like we were just talking about, back pain or something along those lines. And I think making sure that if he's an indoor only cat, and if you have cats in the neighborhood, trying to do what we can to keep them, off your property, which is really hard to do, but doing things that are, deterrents for them. I don't know, people talk about putting, citrus peels in garden beds and stuff so they don't like the smell of that. And they might not, toilet so close to the house where your cat can probably smell it. They can often hear them. That can be helpful. There are medications sometimes that can help if he's a highly anxious cat too. So speak to your vet and we'll get a full picture and see what's happening. Okay.
And a pheromone spray, is that a spray or is it something you plug in or?
Both. It comes in multiple different formats. The plug-in one probably in this situation is going to be the best. But if there's a particular item or area that he's spraying, they say to spray the spray on it because it'll turn it from, like, make him happier in that area, so he's less likely to want to mark there. But yeah.
Oh, lovely. All right. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thanks, Fiona. Take care. Bye. Next on the line, we have Mick from Wood Rising. Hi, Mick.
Yeah. Hi. How you going?
Good. Thanks. Now, your golden retriever hates the water.
Yeah.
My golden retriever likes some water if it's a puddle and it's standing, but she's not a big fan of any water that's moving. So how old is your Goldie?
Oh, he's nearly 12. He'll be 12 in September.
Oh, okay. And has he always disliked the water, or is he just...
Well, I got him and his litter mate's sister when they were 2.5.
Yep.
From a couple in Dapdale.
Yeah.
And he especially doesn't like when water's lapping at the edge of the lake
here. Yep. Yeah, my dog's the same way. To be fair, if there's any kind of a wave or any kind of a boat goes by and all of a sudden you get a little like sloshing up onto the water, she doesn't like moving water. She really likes standing water. I'm trying to encourage her now that we've moved. I'm trying to encourage her like to go into the water at the beach, but she's not very forthcoming that way. I think he's been like that always, it's probably just him. Maybe he's had an experience when he was younger that he's had something that's traumatizing. How is he with a garden hose?
Oh, no, he doesn't like water.
He doesn't like that. So he really doesn't like it at all.
He doesn't like standing water. He doesn't like, he's like a golden retriever. He likes a good mud puddle.
Yeah.
As long as it's just mud.
Just mud, yeah.
Doesn't like a bath.
Yeah.
Listen, that's going to probably be a personality quirk, and you got him a bit older, so it's hard to know what kind of experience he had. I would say at 12, unless you have a real need for him to learn to like the water, you can always teach an old dog new tricks, but it would take some pretty intensive desensitization for it. So you might just let him, be a water-hating golden retriever.
Well, I've had a few goldies. My previous one I used to take out in the surf with me at Redhead, and he'd catch waves with me.
Yes, yeah, yeah. My current Goldie is the least water-loving of all mine as well, so it's just sometimes they're a bit different, yep.
Okay, so I just heard you talking about anxiety, and I thought it might have something to do with before I got him.
It's certainly possible, but, yeah, it's hard to know.
Thanks. I'm not alone, man.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thanks for your call, Mick. Appreciate it.
Bye.
Bye. Next, we've got Julie from Brankston. Hi, Julie. You've got a chihuahua with sore teeth and gums.
Hi, how you going?
Yeah, good, thanks, Julie. So your little dog is about 10 years old, is that right?
Yeah, she's 10 in June.
Okay, and has some sore teeth and gums. So have you had a chat with your vet about what it would take to give this dog a dental and get some of those painful teeth out of her mouth?
They're a canine teeth.
She had
them done about 8 months ago.
Yep.
And it's come back, but it's only in the one front tooth.
Yeah. Some of these small breed dogs, unfortunately, have very poor innate oral hygiene and oral health. Like, they just doesn't seem to matter what we do. There are some dogs that need to have, you know, repeat dentals every 6 to 12 months to try to keep the level of periodontal disease and gingivitis, you know, under control. And they say that it has to do with things like the bacteria that's in the mouth. You know, some animals have more robust bacterial populations that create less acidity or less you know, problems and are less aggressive in the mouth. Sometimes animals will have a really good saliva character that will, you know, keep the bacterial levels at bay, and other times they don't. It's really hard to, you can't predict which is going to be a dog that's going to have ongoing dental issues and which, you know, isn't. The best thing that we can do, obviously, is if we've got a condition where we've got gum recession and nerve exposure, is to get those teeth out of there, and then it's like done and dusted. Then once the gums have healed, then there's no problems. And toothless dogs get on really, really well in the world. They can still eat, they can still play with toys. Frequently, they're much happier than if they have, you know, infected teeth in the mouth. But there are definitely home care things that you can do, depending on how willing your dog is to having his mouth, you know, sort of played with. We would always say that brushing teeth when you've got teeth that are, you know, still in the mouth and relatively, they don't have to be clean, but they have to be not super, super painful, but you can brush them and that will help keep the levels at bay. But there's lots of different gels and sprays and things that you can use as well that can, they're a little bit antiseptic, but safe for them and not too terrible tasting. And so the dogs will often tolerate that, and that can sort of help slow the progression down. But if your vet has sort of gotten to a point where they've sort of said, listen, you know, the only thing that's left for this tooth is to pull it out, then I'd encourage you to just sort of bite the bullet and, you know, get that painful tooth out if we can, and, you know, make the dog a happier dog. And the funny thing with Chihuahuas, of course, not only just Chihuahuas, but sometimes we get, if we've taken all the teeth out, including those canines, we get that sort of lolling tongue out the side, and that's a little bit funny. But it's probably still better. You know, a 10-year-old Chihuahua still potentially has, you know, 2 to 5, 6 years of life yet. And so if we can make those life years really comfortable for him, then that would be great.
Yeah, I'd just rather have, she does get her teeth cleaned every day.
Great.
And whatever, and yeah, I can do anything at all with the teeth.
Fantastic, yeah.
You know, it's good. But it just, and I just don't want the tooth to come out yet.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean, I just, it would be lovely if we could preserve them and then, you know, give them like a denture so they, you know, preserve their natural smile. But that's a little bit of a hard one yet. Nobody's doing that, to my knowledge.
So do you recommend actually just taking the teeth out, not putting her through this all the time? It's better for her and most probably my wallet.
Probably. I mean, it's hard to say without, you know, without reviewing her history and seeing her, but I'd have a really hard discussion with your vet about it. I mean, if you're finding that it's the same teeth repeatedly causing problems, some vets are a bit hesitant to pay, you know, to pull those big canine teeth because they are a really big tooth, and it does depend on the factors about what kind of bone strength and, you know, whether we've got bone that's likely to fracture or things like that. There's a few different factors that would need to be weighed up, and your vet would be the best person to, you know, to speak to about it. They'll have the information there in front of them. But it's certainly not unreasonable to say, let's just take all the teeth out, and we don't have to keep doing this, you know, going back under anesthetic every year and taking one or two, you know, of the worst ones out. Like, sometimes just getting the full mouth out is sometimes the best way to go.
Yeah, she's only got that one tooth that's really annoying. The rest of the teeth are great.
Yeah. Okay. Well, like I said, have a discussion. Definitely keeping up with the home care is going to be the best thing to do then, to keep her as comfortable as you can while she's got it there in her mouth.
Thank you so much for your call, Julie. We really appreciate it. Newcastle Hunters 2 and URFM 103.7. This is Pet Chat, and we're going to look at our pets of the week. If you head to our website at 2nurfm.com.au, click on the lifestyle link and you'll find our Pet Chat program, and you can click on Pet of the Week. And we've got Franklin and Moby today. We'll start with Franklin.
So little Franklin is a 12-month-old white and tabby boy. He's a short-haired cat. Says his chest, belly, and paws are all white, and then his face and tail and back are a nice sort of dark tabby coloring. He's a got a cute little sort of pink nose. He's really lovely and on a white background there. Franklin is a confident cat who loves attention, is not shy about telling you so. At only 12 months old, he still loves to play, has a beautiful nature, and he loves the attention, all the attention you can give him. He's a real talker. They've made a couple comments here about he's quite a vocal little cat. So, you know, if you want to have a silent cat, he might not be the one for you, but a lovely, you know, vocal cat is great. He's relatively large and looking for a forever home with somebody who he can love. They say that he has not been tested with kids, but he would probably be all right as a young cat. He would suit being an only pet or gets on well with other cats. And I don't think he likes dogs very much. So keep away from dogs.
This is whenever they come in contact. So yeah. No dogs for Franklin.
Yep. So yeah, if you're looking for a nice cat, that would be Franklin. I would get in touch and get him into your home.
Yeah, and next we've got Moby.
So little Moby, he's gorgeous. He is a little four-month-old puppy, so you're pretty much getting a clean slate, but it also means you're going to have the challenges of having a puppy. So it says he's sweet, cuddly, just the right amount of cheeky. He's a true social butterfly who adores people and other dogs alike, loves backyard zoomies, tug-of-war, playful wrestling. He's doing wonderfully with his toilet training, but you're going to spend a few more months, you know, working on that. Puppies are never toilet trained at this age, and he's still working on his basic commands, which is to be expected. It says at the moment they're crate training, so he happily settles into his crate. He really enjoys being with people. He has been well socialized with other puppies and adult dogs, but that socialization time, you know, we've got again a couple more months of socialization for him, so before he's really well socialized. He's met lots of people, including older children, and is friendly and affectionate with them. He has been untested with cats, but again, he's a puppy. So lots of, you know, opportunities to do pretty well whatever you want with him in terms of training, socialization, keeping in mind that puppies are a lot of work, but it really means you get to have, you know, raise him the way that you want to and things like that. And just remember, with kids, he's probably great with kids, but he's still a puppy. He'll be going through that puppy biting sort of phase, which he'll likely outgrow, but it's just something to be, you know, to be aware of for puppies that they're all fairly mouthy and things. So he hasn't been de-sexed yet. He's got a couple months before he's old enough for us to do that. So he does need to stay in the local sort of Newcastle, Lake Macquarie, Port Stephens area because he needs to go back to a specific vet hospital for de-sexing.
Yes. Well, he's very cute, and so is Franklin. Yeah. So if
he is a white dog too, so we need to make sure that he's going to have lots of shade because otherwise he's going to, you know, be the sunburn, skin cancer type.
Can you get sunscreen for dogs?
You can, but like you can't put it all over them. So we tend to just put it on the areas where, you know, they don't have a lot of fur. So over the bridge of the nose, you know, on the belly, sometimes the ear tips, things like that. So you can't just sort of slather them all in it. So.
Is it like particular sunscreen? Like could we put our sunscreen on?
No, we don't use human sunscreen. We tend to use doggy sunscreen or like sometimes a zinc-based sunscreen. So
Okay, wonderful. Yeah. Well, that's pretty much it for today. Thanks. Thank you very much, Dr. Kimberly Earle. It's been lovely to have you. And we'll see you in a couple of weeks, I suppose. Yeah. And Cheryl Shaw will be back next week on 2NURFM.